Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. Today we are spending the day at the National Equine Forum, where 250 of the top experts in the country get together and talk about the future of the equestrian industry. So right now I'm joined by Jeanette Allen, who's CEO of the Horse Trust, and Lynn Peterson, who's CEO of the British Horse Society. How are you both?
Great, thank you.
Absolutely fine. Thank you very much.
I'm really looking forward to hearing your speech today. Can you give us a little bit of an inside scoop as to what you're going to be talking about?
Right. It's Lynn. I'll start off because we thought what would be good was to start with the context of the equestrian industry here in the UK. I don't think many people appreciate that there's 8 billion contribution to GDP.
Wow.
That's quite an extraordinary contribution. So it's a proper industry in and of itself. There's around 1.3 million regular riders, and 400 million of our industry is in export goods. So
no
we
way.
Export 400. We do. We export 400 million pounds worth of British equestrian product. For example, the British Horse Society has entered into a partnership with China. We are operating in 13 other countries. So yes, all of us have a stake in exporting our equestrian product. About 60% of our riders take place in non-affiliated competitions. 96% of our riders say that they ride for pleasure. That's what they love doing. So that's a little context around which we have put these organizations to the test.
Yeah, so we've over time managed to streamline how we talk to government and how we talk to each other by creating the Equine Sector Council for Health and Welfare. And what was already in existence was the British Horse Industry Confederation. And what we're very pleased to be announcing at NEF today is, in fact, that those two entities are now merging and becoming the British Horse Council. And so we can genuinely speak with one voice to government.
Oh, amazing. So yeah. We just need to go. It makes our lives so much easier. One, I love the fact that we've got people backing us and fighting for us, which is great. And if we have any concerns or questions or want to help in any way, then we just go to one body, which is you.
That's right. So membership of the British Horse Council will be open, as it is to Equine Sector Council already, to any equine-related organisation. So it's not about individuals. It's about organisations coming together, finding common ground, and where we do agree on something, speaking with one voice. Very importantly, if we don't all agree, then we won't have a sector view on that. We won't present a sector view, and we'll let those disagreements play their course. So individual organisations can still lobby government on their own issues. However, where we do all agree, we're much more powerful agreeing together.
Absolutely. So what sort of subjects are you hoping to lobby government on?
So some of the things we've covered in the past that we would put down as definitely sector-wide successes and where coming together has made all the difference would be, for example, in renegotiating the tripartite agreement for the movement of high health status horses between Britain and Ireland and France. We've also worked very hard on developing a new code of practice for the keeping of equines for government to create as a new statutory instrument.
Let me just hold you there. That would be amazing. Wouldn't it be great to have rules on how we look after our horses? It's going to protect their welfare.
Yeah, we do already have rules, but they're just very out of date. And so instead of DEFRA telling us how to look after our horses, they've asked us to develop the new code of practice. So it is up to date, and we will be reviewing it every couple of years to ensure it stays up to date. On top of that, we've also seen the Control of Horses Act come in, which has helped reduce the numbers of fly graze horses and ponies in the UK. And we've also created the first ever manifesto for the horse at the last general election, which has started influencing parliamentarians to take horses seriously.
Oh, well, thank you for doing all that for us. It sounds like you're doing an amazing job already. So now, from what you said earlier, the British Horse Council will be continuing this work. And so you get the opportunity to go straight to government and to say, how does it work? Do you meet with them once every few months, or how does this, I don't know, I've never been to government. How does it work?
It's really about creating relationships. What doesn't work for government is if you write to them or talk to them with a list of complaints. What they want is a list of issues and some suggested solutions that are actually workable. And that's where so far the equine sector has been immensely successful, is by presenting not just issues, but proposed solutions. And that's created a real atmosphere of trust and mutual benefit in our relationship with civil servants, right up to ministers and the Secretary of State.
I noticed there was a debate in government a while ago, and there was an MP that's particularly close to horses, and it always helps to get them on board, doesn't it? Because if they understand the industry, then they're more inclined to persuade the other MPs.
We've in the last sort of 18 months, 2 years, done an excellent job, all of us, in reviving something called the APPG, which stands for the All-Party Parliamentary Group for the Horse, which is a way for us as the equine sector to inform MPs of what is important in the industry. So we had a large group of MPs join us for the discussion about business rates and how business rates were affecting the equine industry, riding schools and all manner of people who were then subjected to the new business rates. And they are still taking this under consideration. So the APPG is an excellent forum for us to engage groups of MPs to come along and listen to our case.
And how do you put the cases together? How long does it normally take you?
It very much depends on the subject. So some of the issues we've dealt with in the past, we've had to be very reactive. For example, with the horse meat scandal, we had to all move very, very quickly to pull together what our consensus view was as to how we should be identifying horses better, and how we could ensure that kind of behaviour didn't happen again. Also with fly grazing, that's a longer term problem. So a number of organisations built up a very formal case with statistics, etc., and presented that case to government. So sometimes it's as small as a conversation, other times it's very formal meetings, but mostly it's just about keeping that communication channel open. And it's not just us talking to government, it's us taking government's messages and consultations and sending them back out to the grassroots of the equine world and make sure everyone gets a chance to have their say.
It's great that those conversations are taking place. And I'm still fascinated by what Lynn said in the beginning about us exporting £400 million worth of product. I just think that's insane. And I think in an amazing way, and the perception sometimes for our industry, you can tell me if you're hearing this as well, is that it's an elite sport where we all have lots of money. And so we can't get support, we can't get funding because everyone thinks that we've got loads of money. When actually we don't. We're all breaking our necks to try and break even. So with the business rates making it harder and with the lack of government funding, are those things that you will be able to try and negotiate?
Well, our experience is that the rest of the world remains very, very hungry for British product. And equestrian product is very highly sought after. So when you get a group of Asian nations together, as happened about a week ago at Asia Horse Week, the idea of a British firm being there to offer education and to offer different products that will help them with their industry, that's what they're looking for. How can we help them with their industry? And so some of the $400 million is also feedstuffs. So we remain a very popular nation abroad.
I'm not surprised. I'm so proud of being British. And when you see the quality of work that's produced and you see the saddle makers and from, from people that have, what's really fascinating is people that have never had a business background. They see something, they find a problem, they come up with a solution, they create this product, and they're always so well made, and there's so much thought and passion that's got into it, and it's the passion of the industry that I'm not surprised people all over the world want our products. I think they're great.
They do.
And that's why we're going to be having to deal with some maybe slightly drier issues, but as a result of Brexit, there's a lot of work for the sector to come together to do, to look at what legislation are we taking on from the EU going forward? How can we improve it? How can we make sure we keep that trade advantage? How can we make sure that we keep our welfare standards as high as they are, and hopefully even better in the future? So there's a lot of what's going to happen next work that needs to be done. And we think it is up to the equine sector to take an active role and not just sit back and wait for government to tell us what will happen. Mm. We need to actually look at what needs to happen and be positive and proactive about getting those messages to government.
So these drier issues, as you call them, are fundamental for our trade, for our import and our export and money coming into the industry. And we need as much money in this industry as we can possibly get. You know, it costs us a fortune to run our businesses, run our horses. So what sort of things are you hoping to be able to talk to government about?
Well, I know Jeanette can speak very, very well to the specifics, but also I just want to make the point that all of these dry issues, as you say, are part and parcel of our reputation, and that makes us very desirable in the rest of the world as well, that we maintain our reputation for taking care of our horses through all of the things that we do.
Mm, totally agree with you.
So that's been everything from persuading government not to delist diseases as notifiable, such as CEM and EVA, which could have been devastating to the thoroughbred breeding industry. And the rest of the equine world got behind that and agreed with them that would be devastating. And therefore, we persuaded government to change their mind. So that's an example from the past. Looking to the future, we need to make sure that in a post-EU exit world, we've organised how we're going to be able to move horses around Europe, competition horses, breeding horses, race horses. How are we going to move them? How are we going to deal with border issues? How are we going to protect the equines of the UK from disease incursion in the future? So we're protecting our export trade, but we're also looking at protecting our sport. We're looking at protecting our interests. We're looking at protecting the welfare of the horses of the UK.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
UK.
It's amazing. And what on a personal level, Jeanette, what got you involved in the horse industry to start with?
Well, I grew up on the outskirts of London, so owning a pony was not really an option. But we did have a massive riding school nearby. So I'm a riding school girl. And so I grew up riding other people's ponies. But yeah, I've just always had horses in my life. And I'm absolutely passionate about animal welfare in general. And for me, being efficient, being effective, having real outputs, that is just so much more important to make sure we work together than for everyone to worry about competing with each other in our world. Actually, we're much stronger if we stand together and we can achieve so much more.
And are you working with the British Equestrian Federation on this?
Yes, they're part of the British Horse Council and have been part of the Equine Sector Council and the BHIC. So they're very much part of this. All the main sort of subsectors of our world are, so racing, breeding, sport, leisure riding, veterinary, welfare, research, we even enforcement. So we've got representation from all the different major subsectors within the equine industry. So that's why we're hopeful we truly are representative, including equine trade, for example.
Indeed.
So completely representative of all equine related interests and industries.
And how can we follow your journey? How can we follow how these conversations are going? Have you built a website? Are there ways that we can kind of keep informed of what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that any equine organisation can do is to sign up, and we'll be putting details of an email address that people can use that's operated by the National Equine Welfare Council. And you can join the British Horse Council, or as we say, join the conversation by signing up to that list. That will ensure you get told when meetings are happening, what's on the agenda. We'll push government consultations out to your organisation. So that two-way street happens by firstly getting in touch with that email address. And then hopefully in the not too distant future, we will have a website. We have to work out where the money's coming from for that. We might be passing the hat round, but we will have a website, and it will at the very least point people in the right direction and include things like minutes of where we are and where we are with conversations with ministers and copies of manifestos and that kind of thing. So it is very much a two-way conversation, and the best thing people can do is, as a member of an organisation, get that organisation to join in.
And it's lovely that you're so transparent about the conversations as well, so we really can see what's happening. Because I think for a lot of businesses and for a lot of riders, just anybody, grooms, anyone in the industry, it can all seem very overwhelming. And at grassroots level, we're just getting on with our daily job of mucking out horses and, you know, trying to make a living. And you feel really powerless that all these decisions are being made and we don't actually get a say in it. So, and with lots of different councils, you don't even really know who to turn to. So I really think it's a great idea what you're doing. And I will be signing up to the British Horse Council. I just want to say thank you, because it feels like we have somebody protecting us, which, like I said, it can all seem a little bit overwhelming on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, Amy, to be honest. Some of these very big things might not feel relevant to individuals with their own horse, but actually it becomes very relevant when there's an equine flu outbreak. That's going to affect your horse. So keeping disease under control, having proper identification of who owns what pony and where all these ponies live, you know, these are really important things that do boil down to affecting your beloved horse. And that's what we need to do. We need to always remember it's not just about trade, imports and big numbers. our relevance needs to boil down to the horse owner and their beloved horse.
Remember those 96% of the riders riding for pleasure. They have to have a place to ride. They need their bridleways. They need people on the roads to respect them. So as Jeanette says, it does come down to the individual rider and all the work that's going on behind the scenes to protect them, keep them safe.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd both like to add?
This new British Horse Council is going to work extremely hard to bring horses back into the mainstream consciousness of the public.
Brilliant. Let's get people really engaged in horse riding because, it offers so much. The industry doesn't just offer pleasure riding. You know, it offers money into the economy. It offers jobs. You probably know this, but I heard the other day that I can't remember which one it was. Which discipline it was, but maybe it's the industry as a whole, we're providing 25,000 jobs a year.
Yeah, I mean, as part of the rural economy is absolutely key as an employer and as a producer of money moving around the rural parts of this country, and that can't be underestimated.
No, an interesting thing that I'm struggling with at the moment, and I'm not sure you might be able to... You might have advice on this, is that it's somehow, not only do we have to work with government, but we've also got to work with our local community. We have to work with our farmers. In my area particularly, the farmers own all the land and they hate us. They hate horsey people. Mm. So trying to find somewhere even to the level of keeping your horse is quite difficult. So if we can build a really strong, positive view on equestrians that, we're not just going to cause a load of problems, we're actually bringing a lot of good into the country, which as equestrians, we know we do. But if the wider market can see that as well, then it's only going to benefit us. So that, I guess that even goes down to equestrians being as basic as being polite.
Yeah, I mean, certainly from Lynn's point of view, she would get very cross with anyone who didn't thank a car driver for behaving well. But on a national level, just to go to the farming community, we've already made some significant strides forward by working with the farming and rural community on the Control of Horses Act, mm-hmm. because it was their land that was having ponies being fly grazed on them. Mm-hmm. And under the old Animal Act, they were stuck with those responsibility for those horses and ponies for 28 days, which is totally unacceptable. Now the Control of Horses Act has brought that down to 4 days. Now just the equine world could not have got that through without the support of the countryside community and landowners and farmers. So they've seen that we're also here to help with some of their problems, and that openness is continuing, and we're still working with the livestock owning communities and land owning communities to this day.
That's amazing. Well, thank you both very much for your time. Thank you for being at the National Equine Forum, and we can't wait to hear when you get your website set up.
Good.
Thank you.
We'll let you know.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can catch all the podcasts from the National Equine Forum on their website. Just head to nationalequineforum.com and you can see them on our website, horsehour.co.uk. I hope you enjoyed the live stream and getting involved in the conversations, asking your questions to the panel and to the speakers just by using hashtag horsehour, hashtag NEF. You'll be able to replay the videos from the forum if you just have a look at their website and their YouTube channel. Now, this event wouldn't be possible without the friends of the forum. Our corporate friends are the Blue Cross, Dodson and Horrell, the Donkey Sanctuary, Hadlow College, New Shul and SEIB Insurance Brokers. Along with individual friends, thank you so much to everybody that takes part in the National Equine Forum in organising it and making sure it's super successful every single year. We'd also like to say thank you to the forum sponsors, Beta, British Equine Veterinary Association, the British Horse Society, Bransby Horses, the Jeffreys Scholarship Trust, Bedmax, HBLB, Red Wings, Weatherbees, the World Horse Welfare, the Horse Trust, BHA, which is the British Horse Racing Authority, the British Equestrian Federation, and our great supporters, Bully Davy, Craig Payne, NFU Mutual, and we're proud to be supporters of the Forum too. Really looking forward to next year. Already there's a date set. It will be the 27th National Equine Forum, and it takes place Thursday, the 7th of March, 2019. I can't believe we're talking about that already. So pop that in your diary, 7th of March next year. So I hope you enjoyed this year's National Equine Forum. I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.